Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The biggest breaking news stories, an outspoken opinion. The Breakfast Briefing with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio.
Good morning to you this morning. Thank you very much indeed for your company. Lots, as always, to talk about. An awful lot of international affairs in the mix today. A decision, as we talked about on the show yesterday, but formally announced by Joe Biden, the US President yesterday, the Afghanistan troops are going to be pulled out by September the 11th, 20 years after troops went in. Of course, NATO troops, British troops are still there in a sort of training and advisory capacity. They'll be leaving as well. But also the prospect of trouble in Ukraine once again as Russian forces mount there. And of course, we've seen senior figures in the American administration, both the Secretary of State and the Defence Secretary, on visits to Europe to discuss those issues. Talking of travel, those are possibly 6-hour waits at airports on your return. If you do try and get away for a trip abroad after the 17th of May, will be troubling some. They certainly seem to be troubling the editor of the Times, who's put that as the front page story today. But meanwhile, it is the Greensill affair that dominates an awful lot of the political news. Let's talk about all of those stories with James Price. He's a former government advisor. He's now at Hanover Communications and he joins us now. Good morning to you, James.
Morning, how you doing?
Very well indeed. Let's talk Greensill straight up. Here's the first question. You worked as a government advisor. Did you have private sector interests that were conflicting with your work working in the government, or would that have been allowed if you were an advisor, not on a political beat as opposed to a civil servant? Were you aware that this was all going on?
I was not aware, and worse than not being allowed to do any of this stuff, when I joined government, it meant I stopped being able to come on your show for a couple of years. That was the worst thing for me.
Do you know what? We lost a lot of our regular contributors when we used to. Do you remember those days? We were allowed to have people in the studio, everyone. Very exciting times. We used to have two people, presenters' friends, as you know, in the studio with us. And an awful lot of those went off to work in government, which is wonderful for contacts, but finding out what's going on, not so good for guests on the show. But there we are. Well, we're delighted you left government as a result. But what do you make of all this? Because the big developments yesterday, I mean, a lot of news stories around, but the Cabinet Secretary Simon Case ordered all top civil servants to disclose any paid roles or outside interests that could conflict with their civil service job. And I would say pretty much anything they're doing private sector there. This is after Bill Crothers, who is the former civil service procurement chief, in charge of, by the way, £40 billion budget, was found to have been working for 3 months as a paid advisor to the board of Greensill. This after it appears that Greensill has had contact with virtually everybody in the cabinet and in senior levels in the administration. Tory whips managed to defeat the Labour bid yesterday. We spoke to Rachel Reeves about that on the show, to set up this full inquiry, rather more wide-ranging than what the government had suggested. And then immediately after that, the Treasury Committee, led by Tory MP Mel Stride, by the way, announced they're doing a full investigation. So all attempts by the government to sort of play this one down, failing dismally.
Yeah, I think there's an awful lot, obviously, to unpack in all of this. I think the worrying bit is this idea that civil servants were allowed to have these sorts of outside jobs. And I think Bill Crothers said something to the effect of, this was to help me transition back into the private sector, or some sort of nonsense like that. And I mean, that seems very stupid, if only from a kind of HR perspective, that sort of senior bigwigs inside the civil service were allowed to get away with this kind of thing. I think the rest of it is pretty much kind of politics as normal. Yeah. If you imagine that you are a minister, you've got a couple of ministers in a department and a couple of former advisors, people like me, in there, versus 60,000 people or something working in some of the bigger departments, and you've got to try and work out all of the important things that are coming at you from the reams of information that's not very important. Yeah. Well, if someone who knows about a particular area sends you a message through whatever channel, you then get the chance to have a look at it and go, that sounds sort of like rent seeking, like this person's trying to get a fast buck, or hang on a minute, this looks important, let's go and have a look at it. And that's what most of this stuff boils down to. Yeah. And ministers are generally clever enough to, you'd hope, to decipher what's important and what's not.
They are, but the key thing is, as you say, the interest of those who are advising them, and who decides what goes onto the minister's desk and what goes into the red box. Many, many years ago in the 1970s, my dad was a special advisor to the then Labour Health Secretary, David Ennell. And one of his rules was with the civil servants, they would just put everything. I mean, massive, big, sort of, you know, 5 inches thick documents they wanted to put into red boxes. They'd get more than one red box, a senior minister, to go home with or go to on the weekend with. And he would say, no, if you haven't summarised it in one page, it doesn't go in. Because they used to put stuff in and say, oh, well, you know, very yes, Prime Minister. They would say, oh, but Minister, it was in your red box. The implication being if you hadn't made a decision on it or dealt with it, it was because you hadn't paid attention. You hadn't got to the bottom of your red box. But they used to put stuff in at the bottom of the box. So, they can say, well, you know, you were supposed to have dealt with this. But his thing was, if you haven't put a one-page summary on it, which I've already read, you don't understand it and you can't possibly expect the cabinet minister to wade through 40,000 pages to make a decision. You need to provide the summary. That's what you're paid to do. And I do worry that, you know, if a lot of the people who are making the decisions on things have actually got, I mean, this Bill Crothers situation, I mean, to be the procurement chief, basically in charge of a £40 billion budget, procuring from the private sector on behalf of the taxpayer, spending taxpayers' money, and you're being paid on the board to advise the board of one of the financial companies that is seeking those gigs. I'm sorry, on no planet would that be normal or acceptable or pass the smell test. And yet it was signed off in the rules. So is the issue that there's a load of people, I'm not saying these people are on the take, they may be behaving in a perfectly upstanding way, but it's still not allowed. I don't particularly think it is particularly upstanding, frankly. I think these people do know better. But the fact that it was signed off in the rules, that shows the rules aren't worth having at all, are they?
I think you might be right. And I think the big, deep, long-running problem here that rears its head in all kinds of aspects of how government operates. The state used to be a lot bigger than it is. And then we realized, maybe in sort of the 1980s with people like Margaret Thatcher, that you don't need the state to do these things because other companies can do it more efficiently. So you can just outsource things or privatize things. Fine. The problem is that the civil service has never really got a grip on the sort of procurement skills that it needs. Writing contracts, getting good deals for things, understanding the commercial impacts of this kind of stuff. That's the skill set that they still don't really have.
Well, that's what we saw with the vaccine task force, with the private sector's input on that and actually delivering the good deals, which, what a surprise, the EU couldn't do.
Well, exactly right. And so what happened there, realizing sort of the flaws in the system, not to do anything with the people themselves or anything, but perhaps their skill sets. And as you say, the rules, we got the Kate Bingham in, a venture capitalist, bought up huge amounts of vaccines, all different kinds of vaccines, invested in it. And look how well that's gone. But by and large, this has been a really difficult thing for the civil service to manage to do. And so I can almost understand some civil service boss saying, yeah, go and have a day a week in a private company and see how it works. I can sort of understand where the rationale came from. But as you say, it really doesn't pass the smell test in this sense right now.
Yeah, I think that is the key thing. It doesn't pass the smell test. Let's talk about, obviously, a far bigger issue than, you know, what goes on in government and billions of pounds of taxpayers' money being spent. Let's talk about the huge, huge issue of what men should wear to a royal funeral, because this is on the front page of an awful lot of papers. I mean, mind-blowing. This is on the front of The Sun today. I'm so disgusted and repulled by this. And what amazes me is that people who claim to be royalists and monarchists and to care about the royal family will actually, you know, think this is perfectly acceptable. But I find it astonishing. It suits you, sirs, is the front page of The Sun today. Big battle among the royal princes around who gets to wear what uniform, their military uniform, at the funeral on Saturday, because Prince Andrew wanted to wear his full admiral I'm going to say costume, that's in my head, but it is a costume because he's not a full admiral. He was a vice admiral at 55, an honorary role. He has fought. He was a hero in the Falklands War, no doubt at all. But when the age of 60, was supposed to become a full admiral, but he wasn't because, of course, of his the embarrassment and shame over his relationship with the convicted paedophile Jeffrey Epstein. Meanwhile, Prince Harry has been stripped of all his honorary titles, so he'd be turning up in either a very basic uniform, again, being a war hero from Afghanistan, but now he was going to wear a suit, and then it'd be embarrassing. He'd be the only man who wasn't in a military uniform. I mean, how on earth these people can get themselves into this, I have no idea.
It does seem a little bit like rearranging the deck chairs on the top of the Titanic. I mean, it is good in a way, I guess. All the bits of metal and stuff that are on some of these fancy military uniforms, I'm not sure Harry would be able to get it through in his hand luggage when he's flying home from California. So maybe it's lucky for him. And I think by and large, this is not the sort of thing to focus on, although it will sell newspapers. The obvious solution, to refer to our previous conversation, is to take advice from the private sector, do a kind of Britney Spears-style costume change halfway through. That seems to be the solution to me.
Yeah, I mean, it is it is an extraordinary thing. I mean, again, and lots of these are honorary titles. I mean, I don't know why they need honorary titles anyway. Isn't it enough that some of these men are genuine, they're genuine military heroes. They've fought in wars. Andrew, for all his faults since, was a hero in the Afghanistan in the Falklands War. And Harry, fought in Afghanistan. All credit to these people. They've got more gumption than most of us. But I don't know why they need all these honorary uniforms at all. I think it's rather bizarre. Let's also talk, if we can, about Afghanistan. But Joe Biden, troops out. Finally, September the 11th, all being praised. This is 20 years on from the Afghanistan war, which started obviously very soon after that attack by the Taliban, harboured by the Afghanistani government in 2001. It's amazing, though, that Joe Biden gets praised for this when, I mean, a number of different presidents have attempted to just get troops out. When Donald Trump announced that he was going to take troops out, he was castigated.
Right, completely. And Biden has said something like, it's America's longest war at 20 years. But there are still tens of thousands of American troops in Germany, still tens of thousands of American troops in Japan, and that there is an acknowledgement that the sort of Pax Americana exists because America is willing to put troops stationed all around the world in case anything happens all over the place. And Afghanistan may not be an important sort of strategic location. There's not very much there other than, I suppose, poppies for growing opium seeds and some nice spirits of historical pottery making and a few bits like that. But when the troops pull out, the Taliban, who have been hiding away in the hills, will go, brilliant, we've waited it out. We're now going to go back into Kabul. We're going to take it over again. It's going to be more instability. And at some point, I suspect you'll see Western boots happens to be back on the ground there yet again.
This is very, very likely. I wonder if Western boots will be on the ground to protect Ukraine, though, because we have seen, the US sanctions over Russia, over cyber warfare and interfering in the elections there, and that was being announced yesterday. But the real focus now is on what NATO does about Ukraine, with huge amassing of Russian troops on the border there once again. Seized Crimea, the West went, oh no, don't do that, and then shrugged and moved on. It seems to me to be unbelievably obvious and clear that a very clear and decisive message needs to be sent by the US, by Europe, by the whole of NATO, that no, Russia, you are not taking over Ukraine. Do you think that's going to happen?
I'm afraid not really.
It's terrible, isn't it? We talk a good game problem in the West, don't we?
Right, and some nice sanctions will come on some of the nastiest rotters in Moscow, and you won't see quite as many of them in flashy cars in bars in Knightsbridge or Chelsea or whatever, and it might be a bit more difficult for some of these people to wash their blood money buying London property. And that will be about it. And I think whilst certain areas, things like the tragedies in Syria, where Russia has massively benefited, are partly the fault of, I think it was Ed Miliband who said he would back it in sort of 2013, 2014, went against his word and the vote in Parliament fell. That stopped Obama from feeling that he could act. And he went, said, oh, you crossed our red line. And then Obama did nothing as a result of that. But I think in the Ukraine, where the vast majority of people are looking towards Europe, not necessarily the EU, but towards Europe and towards democracy and all these lovely things that we all take for granted here in Britain. And what's the European Union done about it? Nothing. Yeah. And why? Partly at least because the Germans, although they talk a good game on green energy, get huge amounts of their gas from Putin. He can turn that off whenever he wants.
Exactly. Oh, well, we'll talk about that a little bit later on as well. Lots more to go through the papers and there's a big story today with James Price from Hanover Communications.
The Breakfast Briefing with Julia Hartley Brewer on Talk Radio.
If you liked what you heard, please subscribe and give me a good review. And don't forget to catch me on the Talk Radio Breakfast Show every weekday from 6:30 until 10.